This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We bring you this Power Talk on Freedom Day, and we want to just dissect the state of freedom in South Africa. 27 years into the democratic dispensation. So much has been said as you have been part of that open line. So many voices from all sorts of directions in terms of viewpoint. But really, there is this underlying message that keeps coming across. Dissatisfaction with where we are as a country. Some raising questions of this democracy working more for the elites than ordinary people. And someone saying it's almost like it's freedom for the ANC. It's their freedom, not the people's freedom. Some asking important questions. How can we talk about freedom when some people are continuously drinking water with animals, when people don't have lights, when people don't have life? Was one of the questions we got this morning. What is freedom without life? And we often say the right to life is probably the most inalienable right that we have, just as with dignity. Do we have enough dignity in this freedom? Do we have enough humanity in this freedom? Well, I'm going to be joined by the one and only Dr. Musibudi Mangena to help us in this dissection of freedom this morning. Dr. Mangena, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, and I forgive you because you are Nguni speaking. Actually, my surname is pronounced Mangena.
Mangena.
Thank you. Yes, I know that the surname is also found among the Nguni people.
Yes, and the tongue just flows very differently. In fact, I wasn't thinking about the pronunciation yesterday, but I did think, and as you are saying, in my mind it was Mangena, and I was thinking Mangena Tzanin. I was trying to make the connections, and thank you for that, because clearly it's an interesting one. But do you have any connections with the other Mangenas found amongst Nguni people?
No, I don't, and they are found amongst the Xhosa and the Zulu and the Ndebele, but also among the Shona. And so there are Mangena amongst the Tswana and the Bapedi and the Venda.
Yeah.
And I'm from the Bapedi version of Mangena.
No, thank you so much for that point. I think it's also an important, learning point about just how diverse we are. I want to start off to ask quite a broad question. But before I go there, when I said to some people you are going to be our guest today, they asked, "Where have you been?" And I thought, "How are people not allowed to be senior citizens and retire?"
indeed, I am. I'm retired. And I'm at home here in Polokwane.
But when you are at home, I'm sure you are still very much engaged with our political landscape at an observer point of view, probably also giving advisories to some people who might seek your counsel. How would you characterize the state of the nation today as we talk about Freedom Day?
There are many of us who were in the struggle, who were arrested and tortured by the police, who served on Robben Island and were banned, and we went into exile and so on. And we belong to different strains of the liberation movement. And when we meet, we always ask one another, how do we get here? Why are we in this state in which we are now? And some of the people who allegedly are involved in the shenanigans were with us in the trenches. And we don't understand how the transformation, so radical, occurred, that they have now become enemies of the people that they fought so hard to liberate. It's just unfathomable to many of us.
But I mean, when you say that, it almost, you know, makes me wonder, do we have a way out if we can't even just properly diagnose how we have landed in this place of, dare I say, hopelessness and almost giving up on a future that we must still confront and live into?
Yes, it is a mindset thing. And we should change that. You see, there are many of our people who tend to think that the country belongs to a political party or it belongs to certain individuals and so on. And as long as that is the mindset, we are going nowhere. Mm. We must accept that the country belongs to us. You know, we lend it to certain people or a political party for 5 years and to run things on our behalf, not to run our country into the ground or to do as they please.
Mm.
That's not what's supposed to be. And so we need to change that mindset and to educate one another a hell of a lot. And if we don't, we are going to land either in a situation that Zimbabweans find themselves in or Somalians find themselves in, that is, as a failed, some kind of failed state, or we will have a devastating revolution in this country that has no guarantee as to where we will land. You know, when you get into a revolution, especially if you don't have a strong force that directs that revolution, then you might just end up with chaos. That takes us nowhere. So it is important that we use the mechanisms that we have in our hands, which is the constitution and the laws, to ensure that we don't get there.
I mean, talking about those mindset shifts, Dr. Mangen, you are from that stock of liberation fighters who believed in the projects of conscientizing society and people, particularly the broad black consciousness movement. Where would you say, I mean, there seems to be an absence of this in our society today about people's power, about community activism. In fact, during the open line in this show, some of the listeners were saying, as the people, we are not doing enough to act in solidarity. Where have we lost the ability to conscientize society continuously?
Yes, and some of us who are in the Black Consciousness Movement are more to blame than anybody else when it comes to conscientization. Because you see, the blame must fall on Black people. We are the ones who are in charge. So we are supposed to be, you know. We are in charge of the state. We are in charge of the resources, the budget, and so on. But because we suffer from mental slavery, from self-hate, we are not doing the best for our people. And you can look anywhere in every sphere of our lives. You will be confronted by this phenomenon of self-hate. Mm. Why is it that since freedom, we are not educating our children as well as we should?
Mm.
Just go into the township schools, go into the village schools, overcrowding, no books, and they are not delivered. And if they are delivered late, and no laboratories, no toilets, proper toilets for all the kids, no libraries, and so on. Yet we are in charge from the head of state down, the ministers, the MECs of education, the district officials, the principals, and the teachers in the classroom, and the parents.
Mm.
All of us, because of self-hate, we are not able to educate our own children properly. And instead, we still have a phenomenon where we cut our children from the townships to other localities so that they can be educated better, because we can't apparently educate our children. If we are looking for Model C schools, why can't we have built Model C schools in our townships and in the villages where our children will have better education? Now, 27 years later, if we had started properly with education, educating our children well, we will be having people who are 27 years and older, say up to 35, who are well educated to start their own businesses, to function in the economy properly, and we wouldn't be needing so many people queuing for grants and for RDP houses and so forth. We don't seem to be ashamed that up to 17 million of our people are living on grants.
It almost becomes a point of celebration that so many people are receiving grants.
It is the other way around. We should be ashamed. People should be going out to work to support their families and so on. But you also go into the area of health, is the same thing. And you go into the area of state-owned enterprises. There are over 700 of them, and almost all of them are limping. You know, I wouldn't like to compare us with the minority regime.
Yes.
But they build these state-owned enterprises in order to empower their own people and to support the economy. And we destroy them in 27 years, almost all of them. You know, the post office, you go to the SABC, you go to South African Airways, you go to Eskom. Almost every one of them have been destroyed. And the people who are in charge are not ashamed. And just as in education, how do our teachers feel when children are taken away from them? You know, parents are running away from the black teachers in the townships, you know, to take their children. How do they feel at the end of the month when they get their pay? Their own children and their children of their relatives, so their nieces and nephews and so on, and the children of their neighbors. They see them here, they are going to teach at school, but children are running away from them. How do they feel? So we don't have pride at all. And you are a councillor or a municipal manager, and you go to almost all the townships, you know, none of them is clean. Refuse is not removed as well as it should. And sometimes the sewage is flowing in the street, and you say you are a councillor or you are a city manager and so on. So
In fact, the very essence of black consciousness was about infusing the black person with pride and dignity. But as I listen to you, it seems as if you are suggesting that this has not manifested in practical terms in this democratic dispensation. In fact, we often hear, and I'm sure you have heard this from some people, where people would say, things worked better under apartheid, education was functioning, we had jobs. That's what sometimes people say. To a point at times, Dr. Mangena, some people will say the black leadership is failing, even making totalizing statements to say, black leadership has just failed across. There's this sense of despair, which you called for a mindset shift. But is there something much more that needs to happen? Because honestly speaking, the discourse is gaining less and less confidence in black leadership from black people themselves.
Yes, our fate is in our hands. Our future is in our hands as a whole, that is, as black people. It is in our hands. And as I said earlier, we should stop thinking that there is a messiah or the country and this society belongs to a political party or to certain people. Once we stop thinking like that, here the elections are coming. We should ensure that those who have disappointed us are removed and we put in people who will do better. And I'm in the process of finalizing a book.
Yeah.
And it deals with this matter that we need to fix ourselves as a people. And unless we do that, we will go nowhere, because, you know, In the 270 or so municipalities that we have, those municipalities that are doing better, according to the Auditor General, are in the Western Cape under the DA.
Mm.
And the vast majority of municipalities that are doing badly are elsewhere, all over other provinces, under a liberation movement, under the ANC. And you would have thought that it would be different. You know, it would be the other way around. That we will have much more commitment, you know, from us, that you will not be seeing Mfuleni. You know, you just look at that. The cameras, the media are not going to Mfuleni anymore, where sewage for years has been flowing in the streets. And up to this day, we still have the bucket system. In Mangaung and in Nelson Mandela Metropolitan Municipality, a municipality that is named after an icon, we still have the bucket system. A very human, and it is only black people who still have buckets.
And subjected to this. I mean, I want to touch quickly on, you spoke on education and the problems there with teachers, but let's talk about, you know, something close to your heart, which is mathematics in the education system. We still see majority of learners don't perform well here. Really, the throughput in our schools for mathematics and just uptake doesn't seem to be growing any significantly. Is this something that bothers you, or you have tried to understand and can share some insights with us, that particular aspect of education?
There is, I used to say, and as you remember, I was a deputy minister of education responsible for math and science education at some point. And I used to say that there is absolutely nothing wrong with our children, and there is everything wrong with us, the adults, and the parents, and the teachers, and the system as a whole. And I used to tell some of my colleagues that a government cannot complain that we don't have enough math teachers or science teachers. It can't do that. A government can't complain that we don't have enough engineers. A government cannot complain that we don't have enough chartered accountants. A government should say, we need math and science teachers and produce them.
Yes.
Go out there and produce them. You know? Produce them. And the engineers and so on. So there is nothing wrong. All that we need to do is to produce enough teachers of math and science. And the SS can tell you now, the majority of teachers teaching math and science to our kids are not properly qualified for to teach that subject.
And often it's because the students, the learners who performed well in mathematics and science, don't seem to be as attracted to pursue a B.Ed degree, for example, in some instances.
In fact, those kids that do well in math and science at our school level pursue other things such as engineering and medicine and so on. They don't want to be teachers. And part of the reason is because teaching is not prestigious anymore. So now when you see teachers jumping about in the streets and swearing and so on, coming late and all sorts of things, like, it does not inspire confidence amongst young people who say, I would like to be a teacher.
Yeah.
And I think many of us who, when we were students, admired and loved our teachers because they were just so dignified and they were doing the right thing. They were committed to us. But you don't see that anymore.
Dr. Mangena, I'm just going to ask you to please hold the line for me so that I can go to news headlines and we will continue this conversation.
9 a.m. to noon. This is Power Talk on Power 98.7.
Welcome back. It has just gone 25 minutes to 11 this morning here on Power Talk on Power 98.7. My guest is none other than Dr. Musibudi Mangena, Azapo Honorary President and former Minister of Science and Technology, spent his time as a thought leader in the trajectory of our liberation and during this democratic dispensation. Definitely do dial in on 0861-987-000 to be part of this conversation, and you can tweet me at Lukona Mnguni, hashtag Power Talk. I know we've been doing a lot of this, dissecting the state of freedom in South Africa today. Dr. Mangena, we were just talking about the issue of education, and recently you were involved with the UCT's Institutional Reconciliation and Transformation Commission, which came out of the Fees Must Fall protest. What are some of the key lessons that you learned, not just only about UCT, but the higher education landscape in contemporary times?
Hey, there are several things. Of course, one of the fundamental issues that we should face is that as the black majority, we have failed to build other institutions.
Mm.
You know, when the Afrikaners were in power, they created the institutions of higher learning that they controlled, that had their own character, the character of the Afrikaners, and the English the same. They establish UCT, Rhodes University, Wits, and so on. And they built Mikuku institutions for us, like University of Limpopo or Fort Hare and so on. And when we came into power, we did nothing to build good institutions with our own character, with our own ethos, you know, so that they also can compete with the whatever universities are there. So instead, not that we shouldn't do it, we go to UCT and complain that there is racism, you know, but that also goes down to even the schools where we send our children to African schools and English schools and then complain of racism. As I said earlier, why don't we build schools that we can be proud of? Why don't we build universities we can be proud of?
Mm.
But what the other thing that one has learned is that indeed education is not decolonized. We just accepted the universities as they were, and just carried on, and they are, a lot of them are alienating to our students, especially black students, it is not the first time that I've encountered this. Even as a deputy minister of education, I interacted with especially science and engineering students at various universities.
Mm.
And it is thoroughly, thoroughly alienating. We are putting so many obstacles in the learning process of our children that they suffer in order to get an education. So indeed, they were the vast majority of students at UCT, as well as black lecturers and academics complained that institution is racist and it needs to be transformed in a big way. But I think that in addition to that, we need to transform University of Venda, University of Limpopo, or University of the Northwest and so on into world-class universities where our young people can feel at home, where they can learn in their own languages, you know, where our languages is Xhosa, is Zulu, is Sepedi, and so forth. I've got a pride of place yes. at those universities.
In fact, I wanted to ask you to deal a little with this concept of decolonization, because at times some people can want to present it as this simple phenomenon on what needs to be done, but at an institutional level, and deconstructing those institutions could actually be quite a complex task. To your mind, when you talk about, you know, the absence of decolonization in our education system, how would a decolonized system look like?
A decolonized system starts with the kindergarten, where the little ones, our little ones, will be reciting rhymes. You know,
yes.
We shouldn't be having the little ones talking about Twinkle Twinkle Little Star in our kindergartens.
Mm.
No, that's not what we should be having. Or Baba, Black Sheep, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did that. I did that. And I now I know that it was absolutely wrong.
Mm.
So it must start there. We, as different communities, writing rhymes for our children in their own languages, so that they it starts there, and you infuse the values, the culture, and humanity as you understand it at that level. Then it goes to primary school, and in my view, up to grade 3, children must learn in their own language.
Mm.
And they must have books written in their own languages by their own people who understand the language and the culture. And only after grade 3 should we introduce English, but only as a language. But it should be possible to go right up to university learning engineering, medicine, everything in your own language. It should be possible. Mm. You know, all these people, you know, have been to Japan and to China and so on. You know, the vast majority of Japanese don't speak English at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And these beautiful things that they produce, the cars, the computers, the cell phones and so on, they do these things in their own languages. The most important thing is for people to understand the concepts, not so much the language, you know. 1 + 1 = 2 in every language, in Russian or Chinese and so on. And this is what we must ram into our own heads to understand that this is what we need to do and produce people who will be able to relate to themselves and their own people. So education, if it's decolonized,
yes,
should be focused on the dynamics and the ethos of the society in which that education takes place.
The dynamics and ethos. Let us just go to the line. Please do listen in to my callers. Steve, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Lukwana and your guest. You know, on any day when there is a discussion about freedom, I think we actually drag black consciousness into it, and it has happened again today. But I think the point I need to make is that, you know, often when we pose the question, what actually happened to black consciousness, I really do not think that we reflect, you know, on history and identify the one single moment, you know, when black consciousness was not only undermined, but actually came under attack. And I often actually refer to the period 1984 to 93 as a distinct historical moment. And for me, that is a moment when black consciousness was actually under attack from two fronts. On the one hand, you know, you had the apartheid state, you know, being concerned about what it called the Swart Gevaar, the Nieuwe Swart Gevaar. And it went about instantly decimating black consciousness.
Mm.
But on the other, you had a new mass mobilization. And your guest may have been in exile at the time. But I really don't think people appreciate the ways in which the mass mobilization of 1984 to 1993 was at the same time an attack on black consciousness and blackness. Mm. And Lukona, I really think that at some point it is a subject we need to go back to.
Yeah.
And also look at the role of violence in the ways in which it was unleashed by black people on black people.
Mm.
And ask the question, how could black consciousness have survived that?
Yeah. No, I think I'll also get Dr. Mangena to talk to that. Steve, thank you very much this morning. Lucky, good morning. Lucky, do I have you?
I'll say morning, Tobela Lukona and Tobela Monaga Mangena.
Tobela,
can you hear me?
Yeah.
My comment is all about in South African way, yes, it is actually due to fear of change when it comes to our political leadership. That's where I think our failure is.
Mm.
Yes, that's part of my comment. And again, when it comes to educational system, when you commented about how many kids are in one classroom, that's where actually the failure is, because of you find out that the teacher is teaching about 60 kids in a class, but our system says it should be between 32 to 40. Mm. If I remember when I was growing up, we were less than 35 in our class while I was doing my schooling in Ramatau in the rural area. But now currently I've asked my kid, how many are you? As she's in private, she says, we are 29. Mm. And I compared next door and I asked her, because she's playing with the neighbor, and I said, how many are you in the class? She said, if I remember, we're about 49.
Mm.
And I started to comment and I said, what's really ANC taking us to? What they're saying is not what they practice.
Yeah. No, I hear you, Lucky. Thank you very much for that input this morning. Xolisi, good morning.
Good morning, Lukona.
Welcome.
Morning to your guest as well. I just want to speak about two issues. The decolonization of education.
Mm.
As well as the engineers and the so-called, upper there being reluctant to go back to be teachers in class.
Mm.
And I want to speak about this relating to my experience, because I have experience in both. I did engineering.
Yes.
In one of the top institutions in the country, in Pretoria. So the issue of decolonization of education, I know it. I know it because something that I experienced myself. If I can just speak about the lecturers themselves, from the entire first year all the way to the fourth year, well, the final year, I was only taught by three black lecturers. I can't remember on top of my head how many modules I did, but
yeah,
it's a lot. But only three were black teachers in my entire undergrad education, and only one was South African, and of these three were black. So, yeah, we need to change that. And the system right now is not allowing our own black people, particularly the South African people, to enter into that space of academics. There seem to be a lot of gatekeeping as far as that is concerned.
Yeah.
And the other issue I want to speak to you very quickly is the issue of engineers, the doctors and all that being reluctant to go back and be teachers.
Mm.
I worked as an engineer for quite some time, and I decided, I felt this is not who I am. I decided to go and be a teacher. And when I went there, I didn't feel as much welcomed as I thought I would. And right now I'm finding myself in a situation where I seriously need to consider, should I continue with this or should I just go back to my engineering? Because the way things are, it's not welcoming.
Yeah. I hear you.
Thank you very much
for sharing that personal experience in terms of what drives people away. Dr. Mangena, you are listening, Steve, Lucky, and Mxolisi. Some commentary on their questions and comments.
I feel for Mxolisi so much, and I applaud him with all my heart. You know, I wish that things were different and that somebody with that kind of experience who has done engineering would be a boon to our learners.
Yeah.
You know, I interacted with the students at the University of Pretoria who were in the science faculty when I was Deputy Minister of Education. And, you know, they came from rural areas in our from our country. And almost all their lecturers were white and Afrikaner speaking, you know. And there was just absolutely no rapport. Not that the lecturers were racist. That maybe was also a factor. But simply because those black young people who were 18 or 19 or so, for the first time, they were being taught by white people.
Yeah.
And there was no understanding, you know. And they talk about how in class the rapport between Afrikaner students and the lecturers was so clear, you know, they was wonderful and so on. But there was alienation, and even the lecturers themselves did not understand these kids. You know, a kid from Tuva Tuva in a village and so on. If we had more black lecturers, there would be that rapport. They would understand one another and so on and so on, and they would be able to go through things much better. So I hope colleagues will persevere and help those kids. Mm. The class sizes, you know, there are schools where there are 75 kids in a class.
Mm. Mm.
I've been to those. I've seen them. And I come there as a black man in a suit driving a German car or whatever the case might be.
Mm.
And there are our kids. I'm an African man. Here are African children in 75 in a classroom. The teacher can hardly assist those kids. The desks come right up to the blackboard. You know, some are sitting right on top of the desks in a primary school.
Mm.
Simply impossible. And the shame that you have. That this is what I was talking about, that we should be ashamed. And I can't go there wearing a suit and all that, and the kids are 75 in a classroom.
Yeah.
Yeah? And then I go away, and there is nothing. And I can assure you that in one of those instances, I put measures in place to build the school, but was thwarted.
Mm.
I was told that, no, you can't build that school. It's a long story that will not fit
it's for another day. I'm interested in your views on Steve's comment about, you know, the moment in history where he feels that black consciousness was just decimated from all sides.
Absolutely. Yes, it was under attack, and as yet he had articulated it so wonderfully. It was under attack by fellow black people. But it is also an indication of our loss of humanity, our contempt for black life.
Mm.
So the kind of things that we are doing in the townships against one another in the name of the struggle is shameful. And you just look back. In the struggle for freedom, we killed more black people, destroyed more homes of black people than we did against the enemy.
Mm.
We didn't kill this many people, white people who were in power, than we killed black people. And we were necklacing one another, roasting one another, burning one another alive, you know? And we'll dance around that. So why are we surprised that there is so much violence now in our communities, where life doesn't matter, when we have desensitized one another to cruelty against black people. Not cruelty against other people, but cruelty against black people and no one else. So the present setup in this country is anti-black. And the whole thing, the whole, you just look at every aspect of our lives, whether it is policing, whether it is cruelty against civilians by the army, and so it is all against black people. Whether it is stealing and corruption, that is done against black people. This is an anti-black setup that we have in the country.
Yeah.
And that attack in the 80s and the early 90s is a manifestation of that. But it is no excuse for us to stop now. We should continue to teach and conscientize one another about our worth as human beings and about our dignity and about the values of black people.
Ndade, let me just go back to that line. Lingi, good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
I've been listening to Dr. Mangena. I'm a black educator who is teaching in deep rural areas in Brits. I just want to correct Mr. Mangena when he's saying that the way teachers we are behaving, that is not encouraging our learners to become teachers. That it is not about teachers per se. Yes, some of the things might be, but I think the system, it doesn't have those things that can able to retain teachers in the system. And one might be salary. I think Mr. Mangena, he doesn't have an educator in his family. And also, he cannot encourage his grandchildren to be a teacher. This is because of being underpaid. No one can encourage your child to be a teacher in this country. No one.
Okay.
Very rare that you can say to a child, become a teacher.
Okay.
And I want to say again that quality education, I don't see any freedom. And Kibuaka Pilobukukwa would say that I'm sending my child in Brits where I think that he's going to get quality education in a sense of better resources, which I don't have where I'm working.
Not where you teach.
Yes.
Lingi, I think let's leave it there.
I'm grade 8, being 80 learners in one class. Where is quality? Where is freedom, my brother?
Lingi, that's a very tough situation and question and a reality for many. Leslie, good morning.
Good morning, Lukona and Dr. Mangena. Very good.
Yes. Short and sweet, Leslie.
I think our biggest problem is not economic freedom. It's actually the slavery of our mental capacity. Because remember, the apartheid system was not designed for us. But what is happening today is we took the system, and today the system is guarded by us as black. But the system was not designed for us. So basically, we're supposed to change the system so that it suits us.
Okay.
So that's why we're supposed to reinforce things in the society. We're supposed to create a culture, because the culture that is created from the time when we got the freedom, it's instant gratification. It's no longer you need to be disciplined for you to achieve certain things.
Leslie, I think that's a good point. Leslie, I think let's leave it there because I want to make sure that Dr. Mangena can respond before we run out of time. Sorry there, my brother.
Connor, I hear the old man is speaking. The problem with this, our leaders, they only speak good once they are no longer in power. He had a chance to change the entire educational system, but they did nothing. But now he's coming with all these good ideas that were supposed to be implemented while he was still governing. But today, because of it's outside the game, he can tell us what should have been done.
Well, Dr. Mangena, let me give you the last minute to respond because we're almost out of time.
Nah, said I had the chance to change the system. How do you change the system as an individual?
Mm.
You can't change the system as an individual. There's a government is huge, and political parties are huge. You don't have You can't change the situation as an individual with the whole system as an individual. So it is not right. Mm. I have teachers in my family, very many, in fact, yeah. Not one, a lot of them. And so to say that I'm speaking like this because I do criticize my family members as well, relatives who are teachers. We argue a lot about what is going on. And of course, there are many of them who agree with me that we are not where we are supposed to be. The teachers who taught us were not getting any better money than our teachers presently. Yeah, yeah. But they were committed to the cause to educate the black child. Yeah. Now, so all in all, I think that we are agreed with even those who have got a contrary view. In as far as the overall setup is concerned, the last speaker who talked about, the last but one, who talked about taking her child somewhere else,
yes,
other than at the school where she's teaching, it's a manifestation of the fact that as a people, we have not built better schools, resourced them better, such that she can teach her own child at her own school.
Absolutely. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I'm out of time, but thank you. Thank you for your commitment, and we look forward to that book when it is ready.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That is Dr. Musibudi Mangena.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.